Extensive research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. The program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative, executive, and judicial processes in America. And now, Mae Brussel.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel. It's Dialogue Conspiracy, and this is number 274, June the 20th, 1977. I'm going to be talking the entire program today on the escape, or the so-called escape. It was a little brief interlude that James Earl Ray had from the penitentiary, and I'll be talking about that for as much time as we have. I have enough material here maybe for continuation next week, but we'll get into that. Before I do that, I want to tell you that I am able now to mass produce these tapes, and it's going to work out very well. Dialogue Conspiracy is put on cassettes, two shows on each cassette back-to-back. And if you're interested in getting duplicates of these shows or lists of some of the past shows that you can get, you can write me a letter, and I'll enclose the information. Last week I had Dr. Edward Simpson Kalas with me. He was Sirhan psychologist at San Quentin. And the tape on the back of that, the June 6th tape, is one on Sirhan, and the government techniques of erasing memory through Army and CIA technology. And this tape is available. I have one with Wayne Cook on the water conspiracy, and of course the Mormon Church, the laser weapons, Dialogue Conspiracy on Permandex, on Ian Fleming, the one on Malcolm X. I have a list of many of the shows, about 20 or 30 now, that are available, and you can order whichever ones you want. And I get them duplicated at cost, and we can duplicate quite a few easily. It's no hardship now, and I was never able to do this before, or never really made the big effort, but I've got so much mail on the subject that I am getting these tapes out for you. And if you write to me with an enclosed, put an addressed envelope enclosed of your letter and tell me if you want a list of the shows, and I'll get it to you, and then you can write to me. My home address is better because I only come in here once a week for the mail. Well, this past week, James Earl Ray was brought back to prison Monday of this week. He was out for approximately 54 hours. I had said all along that I believed from the time he left the penitentiary in Tennessee that he was not dead. I think I was the only researcher in the country that felt that he wasn't let out for the excuse to kill him. I think that the contacts of James Earl Ray are too important in terms of espionage and his links to people high up in the government, even more important than George de Morenschild, who was murdered before he could become a witness about the Kennedy assassination with the House Select Committee that's in progress now. There are some famous escapes that I have books about at home that I've been studying seriously and looking at the evidence of these escapes. There's a new book out that just came. It's on the shelves right now in the bookstores, on John Wilkes Booth, the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, claiming that there's some pretty hard evidence that he was taken to India. There's another book I have in my library. There's several on Amelia Earhart, that she did not die in an airplane crash and was not killed by the Japanese during the war, but is living in New Jersey under another name. There's an excellent book out now about Bruno Hauptmann and the murder of Lindbergh baby, the kidnapping and murder of the baby. And the person that murdered that baby went on to Germany, died in Germany, and Bruno Hauptmann was given the death penalty and died and was innocent all the time. My research seems to indicate, this is a shocker, and I've said it before in Dialogue Conspiracy, that Lee Harvey Oswald, there's a chance that he was flown to Brazil. I was told once, and the sources, of course, aren't available in documents, from Texas to Baton Rouge to Brazil, and I believe that there's a chance that Lee Harvey Oswald's double was killed and buried in Texas. And of course, I just finished reading the book, The File on the Tsar, where the Tsar, the Tsarina, and their daughters and son were taken out of Russia and were not killed for historical purposes and propaganda. We were led to believe that they were slaughtered in a basement at the time of the Russian Revolution. Actually, they went on to live, and there's good evidence that one of the daughters, Anastasia, is in fact living in the East, and there's a lot of people doing physical checks on her ears and voice and facial figurement of her face, and there's reason to believe that a lot of documentation was suppressed on that. I believe that James Earl Ray was meant to escape. I was told through various sources, again, pretty confirmed documents, not published, but stating the links of the Martin Luther King assassination to the two Kennedy assassinations, and that James Earl Ray was supposed to have been funded by Permandex. I've mentioned that organization before, with their money coming out of Credit Suisse Bank in Switzerland that was later moved to Rhodesia. And I once heard, or was printed in this document, the word was going around there was $1 million waiting for him if he ever got out of prison. And I believe that there's a very good chance that if James Earl Ray builds up a profile of escape attempts, the mole they're calling him now, that if he has 8 or 9 or 10 escape attempts, in quotes, then 11 will be successful, and the prison officials will say, look, we couldn't hold him. You didn't want him in maximum security. We put him with the general population. And I sincerely believe that James Earl Ray will be allowed to leave the country someday. And there was a very good chance he could have left here at this time last week and been brought back because there was clamor for the case to be investigated. There were headlines all around the country more aware of the circumstances now than they ever were in the past, conspiracies or assassinations. One headline from Cleveland said, Congressman Fear Ray was kidnapped. Another one from the Washington Post says, the Hill Assassination Unit will probe Ray's escape, how he got out of prison. New York Times had a large article, The Blacks See a Plot in the Escape of Ray. A headline in the Washington Post, Ray's escape raises the question, why was it so easy? Another one, the San Francisco Examiner and Chronicle, the escape or an abduction by conspirators with a question mark. The Washington Post, again, had a full half-page article, the entire page, Sunday, June 12th. Ray, in May interview, insists he's innocent of murder. It wouldn't make sense, it defies logic, that a man who has national attention, who's doing international television, national television, who has spent many hours with the committee in Washington investigating the Martin Luther King assassination, who says that he was innocent of a murder and therefore would be able to get a new trial based on physical evidence, doesn't make sense that he would try to escape and jeopardize his life or the chance of being shot, particularly when he was with other men that were in the prison for being dangerous, and that therefore the prison officials would have a good reason to shoot at them because the past record of these other men. If he's going to escape, he would escape alone, and the big numbers that went with him, I believe, were diversionary. The first thing that James Earl Ray was asked when he was found hiding in the bushes was by a prison guard, Joe Chapman, who handled these dogs, who said, are you all right? And James Earl Ray said, I'm okay. And he was not found by the FBI, he was not found by the National Guardsmen, he was found by a prison guard. The same officials that allowed him to go over the wall were the ones that brought him in. And while the newspapers said that James Earl Ray was wet and sandy, they also said that he was no more wet and no sandier or dirtier than the guard that brought him in. They were both equally wet. When he was arrested or picked up by the guard, he had in his pocket a state highway map, and he had $290, $80 wrapped in one special wad and the other remaining in another place. And all the inmates in those prisons are allowed a maximum of $70 cash. It's interesting. He had $290 and a state highway map on him. Now, the prison surroundings, we were told, were perilous. The Brushy Mountain State Prison, that's interesting. I love the use of names of places. This is Brushy Mountain State Prison, Tennessee, and the warden's name was Stony Lane. Stony Lane runs Brushy Mountain State Prison. The prison has a 14-foot wall that these men got over with a ladder with a hook on it. There are men in the towers that are instructed to shoot if anybody gets within 10 feet of that wall. The prison is blocked in on three sides with allegedly no place to go. And right away they said these men will be caught because they just don't know the territory. There's rock quarry border all around them. There was 90-degree heat. The mountains were steep. There was heavy undergrowth. It was riddled with rattlesnakes and copperheads. The escapees get tired after 50 hours and allegedly lose their reason and are easier to catch. We read in the newspapers about sharp thickets in the brush, that everything in the area is almost impassable. There's nothing to eat but berries. and as I say, poisonous snakes, bugs, mosquitoes, and there's supposed to be strange noises in the mountains that make the men scared to sleep at night. It's not an easy thing to be an escaped convict in the Tennessee mountains around the Brush Mountain State Prison, is a quotation from the San Francisco Chronicle. The elevated mountains go as high as 2,900 feet, with broken limestone rocks, and walking is difficult. They have 100-foot drops at night, so they can't walk at night or run, and there's abandoned mine shafts. Now, given the terrain and given the kind of ammunition or forces that were out after James Earl Ray, there were bloodhounds, there were helicopters, there were 200 to 300 National Guard. The accounts varied from 150 up to 300. There were 150 FBI agents on the case. The bloodhounds were on their scent. 50 reinforcements were brought in. They started with a 5 to 10 mile radius and then 25 miles and felt the fugitives were fenced in. They had special helicopters with infrared heat sensors that detect body heat, and they could hear convicts breathing or sleeping. There are 125 correctional officers, 10 highway patrolmen, FBI men on the scene. Well, given the terrain and given the kind of force of special military SWAT teams that were out after them, where would you suppose that these men were picked up that made the great escape? The last person to go over the wall after the six escaped was shot just casually in the leg. He wasn't hurt. When the guards finally caught on after 10 or 15 minutes that these men had gone over the wall, it was supposed to be this time lapse, six got over the wall and one was shot. He's back in the prison. It was in his leg or arm, and it wasn't a serious shot. It stopped him. And, of course, he yelled, "James Earl Ray is out. He's out," which is hardly the thing you do. Prisoners don't snitch on each other or last very long. And here was the most famous man inside the prisons of the United States of America right now, with national and international TV coverage and congressional committees seeing him. And the man who has stopped announces who has escaped, identical to Tanya Hearst standing in front of a camera at the Hibernian Bank and saying, "I'm Tanya," and introducing herself. This event got a lot of headlines in the news media, and it started out with this man saying, immediately, "James Earl Ray is out." Well, that was one down and six to go. With that terrain and the story of how dangerous it was outside the prison, once you got over the wall, where do you think the men were found? In case you haven't read, the national newspapers have passed it over. Larry Hacker, one of the men that escaped with James Earl Ray, was found inside of a church. The searchers flushed Hacker out of a stream on the far side of Brushy Mountain, tracked him to a wayside church 10 miles from the prison. They found him hiding inside the church. This is according to Newsweek this last June. How did he get in the church? How did he get away from the terrain? I remember the shooting of Officer Tippett in Texas. John Kennedy was killed, and the men that shot Officer Tippett did hide in a church a block down and were flown out of town the next day, and Lee Harvey Oswald became the patsy for that shooting. Well, David Lee Powell is another gentleman that escaped with James Earl Ray, and he was 8 miles from the prison, and he was thought by lawmen to be moving slowly and deliberately, I'm reading this from Newsweek too, across a wooded mountain, and he was discovered across a field 8 miles west. There was a football field which the prisoners shared with a little league in the town, and this field was right outside the prison, and David Lee Powell was strolling across a field in the open, which is hardly what a prisoner does. If he wants to hide, he stays at least close to the bushes and not in an open field. Powell and two others were on their way to Highway 62. They were just about to the edge of 62, and they were entering Frozen Head State Park at the time that they were picked up. That's interesting because when James Earl Ray escaped from Missouri, he went to a trailer that was waiting for him that had wine, and the door was open, and he stayed there overnight before he went on up to Canada, Illinois, and then Canada. Well, David Lee Powell and the others were on an open field, and then they went to Highway 62 and were entering a state park when they were arrested. Douglas Shelton, 32, was found in a van. He was sitting in a van that he allegedly stole on the state highway. He was supposed to run off the state highway over an embankment, and the guards gave him a chase. But how long had he been driving a car? How long was he in prison? Isn't it interesting that one was in a church and several were at the state park, and another prisoner was on the highway driving a van when he was picked up? Another prisoner, Earl Hill Jr., that escaped with James Earl Ray, was walking in an area, and the authorities were told that people living in the area saw three strangers. It was a residential area, and two men were seen with Hill, and they went on and weren't captured, and these people were near a mining camp, not in the bushes with the rattlesnakes at all, but in the mining camp. And I think that's interesting that people in town saw them and called the authorities. Another one, Donald Ray Kaler, was found. They said that he thought he'd take full flight, that James Earl Ray would play hide-and-seek, and that he would take a straight line. How the officials would know which way these men were going to escape, I don't know, but the story was that Kaler would take a straight line, and he was found nearby Oak Ridge. And I think that's interesting because that's one place that I think James Earl Ray could have been taken in a car, like one of these men had a van. Oak Ridge, Tennessee, is a military establishment where you need security clearance to go into it, and I've said many, many times on Dialogue Conspiracy that the Defense Industry Security Command was behind these conspiracies, and that these agents could take him to Oak Ridge, Tennessee, where you need security clearances, and nobody would know, and he might have been taken there or even as far out of the country as Guatemala. The warden thought he was in Guatemala, and how he got that inside, I don't know, if the terrain was so dangerous. But one of the prisoners was found near Oak Ridge, near the military installations, and that leaves James Earl Ray, who was the only prisoner found in the bushes, not by the FBI or the National Guard. And I think that's very interesting that of all the prisoners that got out, one in a church, one in a van, several by a national park, over by Highway 62 near Oak Ridge, military installations, when they brought in James Earl Ray, he was wet, but he was no wetter than the guards, and he could have been put there. The actual tactics of the escape were interesting. I'll mention them briefly, maybe have time to go into them in detail later. The warden was away in Corpus Christi, Texas, and that city is not separate from research that Joe Cooper did on the escape of Lee Harvey Oswald and the planning of the assassination of John Kennedy. I don't think he went. Cooper is a writer who was murdered shortly after he published his articles in the National Tatler. I believe he mentioned Corpus Christi, and he had mentioned Baton Rouge and the connections in the South. The warden was in Texas, and nobody yet has asked what he was doing in Texas at the time that James Earl Ray escaped, but he did admit that James Earl Ray had to have help to get out of that prison, where he is the warden, that he had to have some kind of help, and it just happened that this was the first vacation of the warden in 5 years. No guards were guarding the perimeter or the outside of the prison. This is New York Times, June the 16th. It says, added to the apparent laxity inside the prison and on the tower, there were no guards paroling the outside perimeter. So when the men leaped to their freedom and raced into the dense woods, they were protected from the guards inside and in the towers. Now, what I believe happened was that by not having any guards on the outside of the perimeter, once the men jumped the wall, they went out around the side of the prison and out the front where the parking lot is and then down the streets to wherever they had to go, and they were selectively arrested at certain days or time periods that would have allowed James Earl Ray to escape if there hadn't been so much clamor that the prison was going to be investigated on how he got out in the first place. The prison official's intelligence network completely failed for one of the few times that the prison has had no advance warning. And this wasn't one prisoner escaping where it was in his head to escape. This involved an altercation on the yard of at least 200 people of the prison population that knew what was happening. And yet the prison officials say that their network failed. The grapevine inside of the prison usually leaks something that gets to the warden or the officials, and large numbers of people were in on this plan, and there's no way that so many people, hundreds of them, could fake an altercation and not be promised for the faking of it without the officials knowing about it, having seven people construct a ladder and get over a wall. The equipment was complicated. There were pipes taken out of the plumbing office. There were diversionary tactics out in the yard. A ladder was placed 200 yards from the guard tower. It was kept there. Imagine a 10-foot ladder with hooks that goes over it for seven people to get over the wall, six successfully, and then one was discovered. But the diversionary tactics included a man pretending he had a broken leg in the yard, and everybody looked in that direction. those diversionary tactics work. I know they do. When we went to see the Beatles concert at Candlestick Park, we were watching them on the field, and there was a lot of clamor for them and attention. And right in front of everybody, right in the front of the field, a woman jumped over the side of the fence, and four people there took her hands and two took her legs, and they started swinging her. And everybody was yelling because we thought they were brutalizing this woman, you know, who had jumped over the railing there. And by the time they got her off the field and everybody looked up, the Beatles were gone completely. And by that time, they were on the highway and away from Candlestick Park. I saw it myself, and it was really a phenomenon. And it's this kind of action in the prison yard that took place where a prisoner pretended to break his leg. And I'm sure that that prisoner will never be punished or asked why he faked it. The one prison tower that is used for emergencies or any type of escape plans was empty. It was unguarded at the time of the escape, and that's the tower nearest to where the escape was planned. As I say, there was the diversionary there, the distraction of the guards. Why did James Earl Ray choose this group of people to go with? One was his cellmate that he knew very well, Earl Hill Jr., who was serving a life sentence. But the other five were people that he didn't know hardly at all. They all had records of violence. There was more chance of his being shot if he went with them. He kept apart from these criminals. He kept mostly to himself and studied law books. Why were these five others going with James Earl Ray? What confidence would he have in them? I believe that this one man was the ringleader, was allowed to make the pipes and the ladder to go over this, Larry Hacker, who worked in the plumbing department, and that they spaced this large number of people so they could catch one and one and one and allow him to get away again if there was that public clamor. The escape procedures involved making water pipes, hooking them over a ladder. With a ladder they made, that was, wall was 2 feet thick. The wall they had to get over was 14 feet high, and the wires there carried 2,300 volts of electricity with guards in the towers. But it's very interesting that the one tower that was next to the, one man was out in the tower next to that, the guardsman was reading a book, and he didn't notice anything happening. His name is Floyd Hooks. He's the tower closest to James Earl Ray. He's been fired for negligence. And, of course, the prison said, I don't want you to think, the official said, that we're looking for a scapegoat. That's according to Murray Henderson, the corrections commissioner. But Mr. Floyd Hooks has been fired. He guarded the tower closest to the wall that they scaled, and he was reading a book and not paying any attention. And he said he was just looking at the yard and looking the other way. The evidence is overwhelming. He was looking the other way. And seven men went over the wall. The seventh was shot by another man a distance away who saw it. The man the closest didn't see it. And tower number three, 175 yards away, did fire at Jerry Ward, who fell down and was taken to the hospital. But the tower for the emergency use was not being used, and the other tower was not used, and he was reading a book. So for all purposes, they didn't even need a tower at that time. The electric voltage was off that night. They had no shocks climbing through 14 inches, getting their body on top of a 14-foot wall and sliding 14 inches under this electric voltage that would have electrocuted them. The electric voltage was off very safely, and they haven't accounted why. The wires were cut. The 2,300 volts of electricity did not go through them, and so their bodies couldn't pass through 14 inches. They're spacing that wall, climbing up and going under. The thing is, the voltage was cut. There was no problem. Another part of the wall had no voltage if it had been on and the wires weren't cut. They called it winter erosion. Part of the corner was taken off, and they claimed that the strong snow and rain in the winter caused a piece of the concrete to recess, so bodies could slide through that corner where the electricity wouldn't touch them. Now, this is a maximum security prison where there's one corner, and in this one corner the wire stops, and this is where the prisoners could squeeze out without too much difficulty. But I doubt if James Earl Ray and six other men could get on top of a 14-foot tower, or wall rather, to see a corner was out. Another factor was that the telephone wires were dead. This happened at the White House at the time John Kennedy was killed. The switchboards in the White House were cut for a while. At the moment of the escape, all the telephones went dead in the prison for 6 to 7 miles around. They couldn't call the neighbors. They couldn't ring bells of escape. And that gave that much time for these men to get into cars or get around the side of the building and get away. At the end of the week, the prison officials still weren't sure what caused the phones to go dead at that critical moment. They tried to cover it up by saying that after the escape, so many people called in about the escape to find out what was happening that the telephone lines got blocked. But the truth is that the assistant warden named Clayton Davis couldn't use the telephones at the prison. He had to send a car 6 miles down the road to report the escape to the sheriff in Warburg, Tennessee. And then the local roads were cut off. But by the time he went 6 miles down the road, these men could go 6 miles in another direction. They could go in many directions, get into these churches or out in the periphery where they were supposed to be, because they had that much time advanced. The phones were off. The prison officials then needed 45 minutes to organize a full-scale search. They said it took them 45 minutes with all the telephones off to communicate with each other. The New York Times said prison officials rushed to the telephone to broadcast an alert. 6 others scurried off into the dense woods. As they did, none of the telephones worked. "I didn't have a telephone for an hour and a half," said Deputy Warden Davis. "I had to send a man 6 miles to report the escape." Davis was alerted by a radio. The state officials in Nashville said the phone system is an independent cooperative operated by the Highland Telephone Cooperative, and therefore this telephone company was off at the time that the men escaped, and that gave them a little lead to get out of the country. As I say, the warden thought that James Earl Ray could have been in Guatemala, and how he thinks he could have done that, going over that high wall with all those snakes and brush, it's hard to conceive unless he knew that he could walk around the periphery and the guards weren't there. The telephones were out that night, and the inconveniencing, as I say, gave a good delay. The wires were cut, and there's been no explanation yet on who cut the wires for the high voltage. When asked Sunday why the high voltage wires hadn't been extended the length of the wall, the directors of the search array theorized that the mountain had been moved or eroded in the south, and these walls were hard and have chipped off with the winter weather. They said that the area was hard on it, the climate was hard on it, and the corner was off, and that's all they could account for, that part of the wall. And they found no evidence that the high voltage current was off during the escape, but they never interviewed the person who said it was. There was a gentleman who claimed that the high voltage was cut off at the time of the escape, and the Tennessee Corrections Commissioner Murray Henderson and Public Safety Commissioner Joel Plummer never interviewed the man who said the wire was cut. Their excuse was that you'd have to interview 100 trustees to find out which one said it, and that's not a good source of information. So they're not interviewing the various persons because they're employed by the prison. And one of them said that the voltage was cut and severed, and they're trying to discredit this person and not even call him in as a witness. Well, if something is this carefully conceived that even the warden thinks that James Earl Ray could get to Guatemala in that time period, what is the meaning of this event now? What is the historical meaning? Given the physical evidence that these people actually were in strange places and not in the brushes, what is the evidence of who gains and who loses? You have to look at the time slot of the escape of James Earl Ray. It took place in the week of June the 6th to June the 9th. At June the 6th, the New York Times did a shocking thing in running a full-page, practically full-page article about the Assassination Committee in Washington, D.C. that's investigating the killing of Martin Luther King, as well as the killing of John Kennedy, President John Kennedy. And the committee's only been formed since March. This is June, and the New York Times has been a conduit of suppression of news, of this kind of news, for many, many years, particularly since they published the notorious Warren Report. New York Times came out with an article discrediting this committee. And that's on Monday, and on Friday, the primary witness for the case that they're discrediting gets out of a maximum security penitentiary in Tennessee. Thursday night, this was the same week, on June the 8th, Geraldo Rivera had an interview with Mark Lane and Dick Gregory, and an FBI agent by the name of Mr. Murdoch, who's retired from the FBI, who claimed that the FBI was capable of killing Martin Luther King and he gave some pretty hard reasons why he believed that they were glad the king was dead and that they could have been part of it. So that June the 8th, this Mr. Murdoch is on national television, coast to coast, talking about the conspiracy to kill Martin Luther King. And then on Friday, two nights later, James Earl Ray has escaped from the prison. And this man claims that he did not kill Martin Luther King, which would confirm what Mark Lane and Dick Gregory have written about in their book. So they promised, I believe, James Earl Ray these goodies, get him out, and at best, there'd be no way to confirm this information because he wouldn't be around for the committee. As I say, the only reason I think he was brought back was because of the public clamor and the headlines. Now, there's definitely a conspiracy to get James Earl Ray out down the line, as I say, with the warden's suspicions of where he was and the physical part of the lack of guards and where the men were found. Representative Louis Stokes of Ohio said that considering all the coincidences, including the vacationing warden, if there was outside participation, it was for two reasons. One, either Ray would get out, be gone, never seen again, or they would kill him and lure him out for that purpose. Now, I believe that there are five or six reasons for this, and that Stokes cannot limit the purpose of the so-called escape to two. I think they would have liked Ray to get out if the method of his getting out hadn't been so obvious and so many people hadn't caught on. I believe that they wanted him out of the country because Congress is investigating the Martin Luther King assassination. But this would add fuel to the conspiracy theories because people jumped on the bandwagon in the same way they did when President Nixon fired his team of investigators of Watergate and he was forced to get another prosecutor. What happened now is that James Earl Ray will be put in a federal prison, which will be easier for the federal government to watch. They can poison his food. They can have him killed like Valachi. He's compared himself to Valachi. They brought him home because of the clamor, but they were capable of getting him out of the country if America stayed lethargic or indifferent. There's also the very good possibility that this is the dry run for another escape that will really happen, then Ray will be gone for good. If the committee presses for too hard, if Ray doesn't want to be confined, or if Ray really starts to talk, and his recall comes back, if you give him a reputation for being a mole, for getting out five times, six times, seven times, if he goes the eighth time, they'll say, well, this time he did it. We know that Mr. Carlos, the notorious terrorist in Europe who's escaped many times from events and murdering of agents, who I've claimed is an agent provocateur, has not been found, and the mole who dug under the safe deposits in Nice and got millions of dollars jumped out of a window in the police department at the time of a hearing a few months ago, and he is gone, and his millions of dollars are funding secret armies around the world. These terrorists and people associated with these assassinations have a very good way of escaping in the hands of police and authorities. So now that Ray is a problem to the Tennessee prisons, they can put him into another prison if they have to, and I think it's a dry run with every possibility he will be out. He's not going to be there until he's 72. Another thing that can happen is that the conspiracy researchers can be put down. They were all yelling that Ray would be killed and that he would be murdered on the outside and he would be shot, and this is why I was so cautious about it, because then the editorials come back and say, see, some people see a conspiracy in everything. There was no conspiracy in the James Earl Ray case. He went out in the bushes. He spent 54 hours. He's home. He added 3 years to his sentence, and that's all there is to it. As I say, this Governor Ray Blanton had an interview with the governor of Tennessee, and this is what he told the press. He said there were two possibilities on Ray's whereabouts. That one, that he's connected with a design plan that could put him in Guatemala, or he could still be in the area. Now, given the prison terrain of a maximum security prison, I think it's pretty interesting that the governor of the state of Tennessee thought immediately that James Earl Ray was in Guatemala. I'm sure that he knows quite a great deal about the case that many other people would not speak about or venture out to say, because, as I say, he knows the terrain of his most ferocious maximum security, and his possibility was that he was still there, but he didn't say where. He could have been at Oak Ridge, and he could have been in the church, and he could have been in the van. There are a lot of places where he could have been. The escape plan, as far as the investigation goes, is limited to what they call an inside conspiracy. And this is why I don't have any confidence in the committee in Washington investigating these assassinations. They say we're convinced it was an inside plan, meaning no grand plan like the CIA or the Defense Intelligence Agency. But every guard who takes care of the prison goes home at night. He works 8 hours a day and he goes out at night. And there's guards who have worked with the intelligence community continuously. They do in California, and I know they do in Tennessee. And even the guards that had the bloodhounds that were looking for James Earl Ray, they would work 12 hours, and I read go home, take a bath, and be with their family and sleep, and go back 12 hours. So if the wires are cut in a prison, I'm sure that the high-voltage wire isn't left to a prisoner to cut. I'm sure that making ladders with pieces of the plumbing and leaving them in the yard till you're ready to get over the wall and not being seen by the guards is an inside job. Sure, the guards are inside, but they know someone on the outside that's letting it happen. It's very unusual for guards to be reading books when they're supposed to be seeing if any man comes within 10 feet of a wall. It's unusual to have the phones cut, electric wires cut, the perimeters off on the outside. It's unusual to have men, as I say, found in a church, in a van, at a state park, near a military installation, and not believe that the guards, who also live on the outside, could have some part in this plot. Because there's no such thing as an inside conspiracy. It's not a monastery where they take a vow and never come out. The guards are outside people, and they're only in a short time, and there are a lot of people that work for promotions and do things on the inside in order to get out. I remember a letter I got from Soledad. Well, there were several of them, particularly at the height of the SLA, when they were looking for Patty Hearst. And I met one gentleman there in a solitary wing at Soledad, who was in a cell next to Robert Hyde when I was visiting him, who was offered a chance to escape if he would kill somebody. Four officials in California, once he was on the outside, and they would never bring him in afterwards. They were allowed to escape if they would do a favor. And the same way with these men who have a life sentence at Tennessee, if they go out for a short time and they're told that, you know, that they're part of a plan to let James Earl Ray escape, and then their years will be dropped or they'll get certain benefits in prison. It can happen that way. It happens in the prisons I've studied, and there's no reason it couldn't happen there. Another event that happened was that each generation, which is every 7 or 10 years now, it's not as long a gap as it used to be, gets brainwashed with headlines to reinforce the original lies. Now, James Earl Ray has given interviews saying where he was when Martin Luther King was killed, who was in the room at the Lorraine Motel, how his fingerprints got on the rifle, but he didn't shoot the rifle, how he got his money. He has told this congressional committees and for articles and for books, yet the minute this escape attempt took place, the Sunday New York Times had a headline, Ray, the confessed killer of Reverend Martin Luther King, is out, escaped. Thursday, the San Francisco Chronicle says, has an article, The Making of an Assassin, part of a book by Mr. McMillan that we may go into. The Salt Lake Tribune has a headline, Ray, the convicted assassin of Dr. Martin Luther King, escapes. The San Francisco Chronicle, again, Ray, the convicted killer. The New York Times, James Earl Ray, wanted for the murder of Reverend Martin Luther King, was captured in London. The Chronicle, King's assassin gets loose. So you multiply the major media has headlines in all the papers, the confessed killer, the making of the assassin, the convicted assassin, the convicted killer, the murderer of Martin Luther King, King's assassin. They reword it 100 ways, but always getting back to the fact that he did this crime when James Earl Ray says he didn't, and he told Judge Battle he didn't at the time that Percy Forman told him that he had to plead guilty. His attorney, Percy Forman, who's represented the CIA in many cases, never once asked James Earl Ray, did you kill Martin Luther King? He told him to plead guilty. There was no trial. And Percy Forman is interviewed by the news when James Earl Ray, in quotes, escaped. We get the same media brainwashing of William Bradford Huey, George McMillan, the New York Times, Percy Forman, over and over again, the same rehashed story. At the time that the Congressional Committee is trying to get the heart of this matter, and hundreds of researchers around the country are working on the statistics and facts of this murder, the media is brainwashing and using it as a tool to reinforce the original story. George McMillan wrote a book, a new book called The Making of Assassin, about James Earl Ray, and of course, as soon as the escape attempt took off last week. 5 reprints of his book excerpts were in the newspapers on the West Coast, East Coast. And James Earl Ray said that George McMillan is lying. He doesn't tell the truth. He lies in his book. But that doesn't matter. McMillan gets the headlines. And they don't tell you that George McMillan is the brother of Priscilla Johnson, who's worked with the CIA, with Marina Oswald, with Svetlana Stalin, that when she was brought to this country, she stayed at their home in Long Island, that it's a CIA family, and that they're distorting the media. The CIA is still in the media, distorting the truth. Well, I have so much material here on James Earl Ray's escape, on who gained and who lost, and the time, the 45 minutes are up, so I will go into it a little more next week, I believe, because some people gained by this attempt and some lost. I believe that James Earl Ray was taken away from the prison and was safe, brought back the rainy night on Sunday and picked up by the same guards because the pressure was on the guards. Therefore, they took him out of the hands of the FBI or the National Guardsmen, brought him in the prison, and we will see a successful attempt. He will get away and escape and pull in those notorious dollars that they have, which, as I said, I think it's supposed to be $1 million. And James Earl Ray someday will successfully escape. But in the meantime, the Congressional Committee and the researchers are put down, and we can be told, see, there was no conspiracy. He's back in the hands of the officials, and he wasn't killed. This is Mae Bressel and Dialogue Conspiracy. I'll see you next week.